and welcome to the CIO Today podcast. I'm your host, Stella, and in this podcast, we bring you insightful conversations with the most forward-thinking leaders in technology. Today, I'm thrilled to have Stephen Pullum, the visionary founder of Fricurity AI, join us. So without further ado, let's dive in. Hi, Stephen. I hope you're doing well today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Stephen is the visionary founder of Fricurity AI, a company focused on promoting AI literacy and security awareness across Africa, especially in the underrepresented communities. His expertise makes him a thought leader in navigating the complex world of cybersecurity and artificial intelligence. So let's get started with some questions so that we all can get to know more about you.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. Stephen, your journey into technology began in 1983. How did those early experiences with the technology shape your career in cybersecurity and AI today?
Well, in 1983, my mother, I'm from Texas, United States. Mm-hmm. My mother bought Commodore 64. And in 1983, that was pretty technologically advanced for home computing. Mostly it was a mainframe world, and but I had home and in rural East Texas, a Commodore 64. So most people were in sports. I was at home learning how to program BASIC and sprites and things of that nature. And then my school of Jefferson Independent School District had a computer lab, and it was had Macintosh, had Apple IIcs, Apple IIes, and Macs. From that point, I went to a university and learned to program Pascal, but that wasn't my passion because at the time, everything was mainframes. So I went into the United States Air Force later that year, 1984. And a couple of years later, I was able to start into the communications computer systems field in the Air Force. Mm-hmm. That put me behind mainframes, Honeywells, Sperry Unisys, Crays, PDP-11s. I had to learn the old way of doing things, cards and punch tapes and things of that nature. But at the same time that was going on, this is 1987, 1988, you had something called the Rainbow Books. And the Rainbow Books was at that time the only valid trusted security model for mainframes in cybersecurity. It wasn't really cybersecurity. There wasn't a word. The word cyber wasn't used in the field. It was data processing, DP, and then it went to IT, and then it went to, you know, you had data processing centers, big mainframe centers that process data. And from that point, knowing the security in the environment that I was in the Air Force, cybersecurity was an integral part of my career field. And so from that point, about 10 years later, I left the Air Force active duty, went into the Air Force Reserves, and started my civilian career. So I capitalized on what I learned on the Air Force in security and use it in a civilian career, but still maintain my allegiance to the United States Air Force. And so after 27 years of Air Force affiliation, plus a lot of different positions using cybersecurity, that kind of totaled to 35 plus years in cybersecurity. So security has always been an integral part of what I've done because of the environments I work for in the Air Force. Never really thought about it as a career field. It was just an integral part of doing the job. And so that's how I, and so also during that time frame, we also use a lot of artificial intelligence. So the artificial intelligence that you see today is just really a piggyback of what existed then. And you have to remember, Alan Turing created artificial intelligence in 1950. So it's been around, and I've been around a good portion of it.
Right. That was very inspiring for me as you started about how you used to live in Texas and all. So can you please elaborate on what you mean by AI as the great reckoning, and how do you see AI shaping the society as a whole in the next decade?
Okay, so let me distinguish between what I consider AI and generative AI. So what I mean by what I say when I say AI is the great reckoning, I want to go back in time to 1999, where the world was concerned that the year 2000, everything was going to shut down. We was worried about
Right.
the millennium bug, and we just knew the world's going to come to an end January 1st. Well, January 1st did not stop the world. But before
Yeah.
1999, in the early 90s, we had things called bulletin board systems. You had modems, US robotics. You had 900 baud and 9600 baud and 14 fours, and you had things like that. But only a few people, few people really got into that kind of technology, bulletin board systems. And bulletin board systems are what created the protocol called GIF, GIF, because that's how you transfer pictures. And so around 1994, somebody came up with a markup language called HTML. And piggybacking in the data frame, you had Mozilla, you had Netscape, you had all this stuff exploding. But nobody really gave it really much attention until after the Millennium Bug was finished. And at that point, technology exploded. And that's right after, that's what they call the dot-com boom, right after the Millennium Bug. And so the dot-com boom. But only, again, certain companies, certain fields capitalize on it. I'll give you an example. Jeff Bezos just wanted to sell books online. Microsoft was still based on DOS and Windows. Most of the world was Novell and Lotus. And so, but the internet allowed businesses to do B2B without having to transfer mass amounts of data through what's called EDI, electronic data interchange. So the internet enabled a lot of things for business-wise, but the population at large was not educated on it. And so one of the big indicators of that was the I love you. So if you haven't heard somebody in a long time and they send you an email all of a sudden saying I love you, well, you naturally say, okay, open it up. Well, guess what it did? It just exploded the world. That wasn't the first mass virus, but that was the one of the most popular ones because it made people aware of how vulnerable they were online. So still, the underrepresented populations never got that education, but the technology was available to them because everybody received an AOL CD in the mail. Everybody jumped on AOL. And so, and then you had, Yahoo, and you had all these things that no one was educating people on. Fast forward, and you remember that because it started, cell phones started becoming internet enabled. Still, no one's addressing the population. You have your techies, you have your upper echelon, I would call, but no one's addressing the people who you go to Walmart and get this same technology. Or your grandmothers and your grandparents are now getting attacked through, phone calls. Let's fast forward to 2022 when OpenAI released ChatGPT. And a couple of years further to 2024, whereas now the same thing is happening. If you look at who is accessing the tech and who the tech is leaving behind, it is the same exact paradigm as 20 years ago. But you can't separate the population because if it's AI, if you look at Google, hey Google, or Siri, or Alexa, all that is that's all AI. So if you don't educate the population, the technology gets there, but they misuse it. And if you don't realize what misuse is, look at TikTok. You can do all these things on TikTok, but if a to an uneducated person, causes a lot of damage. You can get people die over TikTok challenges because they're not being educated. So that's what I mean is called the Great Reckoning. What was did not happen 20 years ago is going to happen again now. And so I said, so the people like me who was around 20 years ago, I will sit there and say, hey, you guys need to pay attention to what you're going through is not new. Maybe the tech is a little new. Maybe the what's going on a little new, but it's as new now as it was 20 years ago. And so there's a reckoning for folks who sit back quietly and do nothing about it. And that's why I call AI the Great Reckoning, because people think this is brand new. And I thought about this today. I said, I wonder when we went from rotary phones to touch tone phones. I wonder what they thought about that then. Oh my goodness, the world's coming to an end. I don't have to dial that circle no more. I can press a button. Or we went from touch tone button phones to just touching the screen. People always forget what happened before then as if the tech is new. Basically, a phone is still a phone. So that's what I mean, in particular about the Great Reckoning.
Great. I am now actually very much interested in knowing how important is the human factor in cybersecurity and what can companies do to foster a culture of security awareness.
I believe I forgot a couple of years ago, there was an initiative called Firewall of One. So, educated population, regardless of demographics, is a more secure population. You have to look at who is, you have to put your mind, you have to put yourself in the mind of who I would target if I was on the other side of the fence. Then you have to look historically on who's being targeted. I give an example. When COVID hit, right? Everybody's at home. Your grandmother, you're remote working, but your grandmother has the same internet speed, the same router as you do, right? So you're no more secure than she is. But who are they going to go after? They're going to go after the elderly, the misinformed, the ones that don't know to change your passwords, the ones with passwords as their family members. They're going to go after those kind of vectors. And they're going to sit there and call, "I'm from Microsoft." I hate to say this, it happened in my own family a couple of times. They received a phone call, "This is Microsoft. I detected a virus on your computer. Send us $3,000 and we'll clean it for you." Now, they're not aware that Microsoft is too big to care about your individual computer. You understand that? But that is, Microsoft does not have a billion people sitting around to monitor a billion people for viruses. That's not even what Microsoft does. But that is the demographic spending their savings and spending their, because not because of ignorance, but because of non-education. And so that there is where cybersecurity comes in. Cybersecurity is just not routers and switches and firewalls. Cybersecurity, I give an example and I use this all the time. Cybersecurity is a mindset. It is a mindset, period. And people ask me, why is it a mindset? You can buy a home, you can buy a gun, right? You can go and learn about that gun. You can go to a range and become proficient on that gun. And you can get licensed on that gun. But can anybody teach you or put inside of you the necessity of securing your home? That's cybersecurity. You can have all these tools, but can't nobody make you understand the importance of the tools? And it's always after the fact. If your neighbor gets robbed, next thing you go and do, you want to go buy a gun, hypothetically. But it's always after the fact, it's always reactive. Cybersecurity in education is proactive. You can proactively, so if everybody in the neighborhood knows this particular neighborhood is susceptible to theft, then everybody looks out for each other. That's cybersecurity. And that is how the mindset of cybersecurity has to be. Cybersecurity is just not threat hunting. Those are careers in cybersecurity. But nobody can make you understand the importance of what cybersecurity actually is. It is a mindset.
Well, that's a very interesting and innovative perspective. So on to the most asked question of our podcast, actually. So for the upcoming generation of young ones who are aspiring to work in this field and be successful in this field, or looking to find a direction, what advice and tips would you like to give them? That's something that I would like to know.
So, in order to be successful in this field, you have to face a couple of realities. There will never, number one, you will never stop all the hacking attempts. It's impossible. You will never stop viruses. You will never stop hackers. There is never a completely trustworthy system, ever. Created by man can be hacked by man. So, that's the first reality. Reality number two, no one knows what you do. You can explain it a thousand times to your administrative staff, your human resources staff, your legal staff. They have no idea. They do not want to know. They want to know the end result. Are we safe or not? Number three, you're going to put in long hours. You're going to put in long hours. So whether you're on call, whether you've been the company's been hacked, whether a lot of things, you're going to put in long hours. Number four, I always say you're at fault for everything. Everything. If the coffee machine is not working, the IT people did something. If my computer screen does not come on, though I did not turn on the power button, the comp IT people did something last night. Once you get those kind of things in your mind, it becomes easy. It becomes easy because once you make the realization that, hey, it's just like any other thing, you are the engine in the car, and until something happens to the engine, no one pays attention to the engine. It may change the oil every 3 or 4,000 miles. As long as they can get in, turn that engine on and drive, the engine is just what an engine does. So to be successful is to take the job out of it and make it like I did. I turned a hobby into a career. So at the center of all this is a hobby. The fifth thing that's very important to remember, it seems that at 5 o'clock, all problems go away, except for
Right.
IT. Except for IT. That's probably what happened. And so by 5 o'clock, all problems go away. And if you're IT, all problems need to be solved by 8 a.m.
Yes.
When people come back, they don't care what happened through the night when you're working.
Right.
Are you updating? Are you patching? But at 5 o'clock, all problems go away. And at 8 a.m., all problems better be solved. So once you realize that, the job becomes fun. It becomes fun. And it's hard. It's hard work. It is unrecognized work most of the time. Unless something happens, then you're the first to get blamed. But in the end, you join this as like a, it's a profession. It's not a job, it's a profession. It's not even a career, it's a profession. No one, if you think you're going to get generational wealth, that's insane. It's not going to happen. No one gained generational wealth. And the reason I say that is even the billionaires in tech are still working. Bill Gates is still working. Jeff Bezos is still working. Elon Musk is still working.
Right.
So there's no such thing as generational wealth if the billionaire Zuckerberg is still working. So if
Exactly.
they're still working, you're going to work. There's no such thing as generational wealth. You just enjoy the ride. You just enjoy the journey. And then when you get tired, when it's no longer fun, stop. Because there's going to be more problems tomorrow. Because the tech changes so fast, the career changes so fast, everything changes so fast now. The problem you solve today is a different problem tomorrow. And you got to face that. There's not going to be an end to this. And once you come to that realization, it becomes easier that, hey, you got to win today. Today, you got to win. Tomorrow's another battle. You're not going to put this fire, you're not going to put out the forest fire. All you can do is put out the brushes every once in a while. That's how you become successful. It's all in your mind.
That was such a nice insight. Thank you so much for sharing that with us, and thank you so much for joining us today. It was a really
Yes, ma'am.
wonderful experience talking with you today, Stephen.
Thank you. I appreciate it, and I really enjoy talking today myself. So thank you and take care.
Well, that brings us to the end of this episode of the CIO Today podcast. A big thank you to Stephen for sharing his expertise and experiences. It was a pleasure having such an inspiring conversation. Until then, I'm Stella signing off from the CIO Today podcast. Take care.